This Two Lectures episode features venture capitalist, entrepreneur, and photographer Taylor Davidson. Taylor helps entrepreneurs build innovative ideas into remarkable companies. Recorded live at the global event in Victoria, Australia in 2015.
So I don't know how it's possible to follow the chef, actually, and what amazing food we've had today, but I'll try. So thank you for the intro. So I wanted to start by sharing something that's a little embarrassing. I played the lottery, not just once or twice. I play the lottery once, twice, three times a week, and I've done this for the last 15-odd years. And I know the odds. I know the probabilities. I know that playing the lottery is a tax on ignorance. I know that this is, that makes absolutely no sense. So when I buy a lottery ticket, I think about the same thing that all of us do. We think about how winning the lottery would change our lives, right? But I don't think about all of the big ticket items. I don't think about how the cars or houses or trips I would take. I think about how it would affect my daily life. I think about how it would affect what I'm doing this day, what I'm doing this hour, what I'm doing this exact minute. And so to me, this lottery tickets that I buy, they aren't about the big change. They're about the small change, right? So they're about the small things. A constant reminder for me to think about exactly what I'm doing that day. And the funny thing is I often don't even check to see if I've won. For days or weeks later, and it makes no sense, but it's the act of keeping that ticket in my wallet is a constant reminder to be present in the moment and be a part of what I'm doing right then, that moment in time. So my parents, when I was about 12, my parents took my brother and I out of school, and we went to go live on a sailboat. We actually sailed from Virginia down the East Coast, down to Florida in the Bahamas. So we spent about a year and a half sailing and traveling and living and exploring. This was not an easy thing to do, as you might imagine. My parents, this took a tremendous years of teaching themselves, of learning how to navigate, how to fix everything possible on a boat, fix a sail, fix the engine, how to navigate, how to make sure that we were able to be safe every single night in Anchorage, right? And it wasn't easy to plan for either, right? So we had to spend thousands of hours planning and saving, how to figure out how to save money to be gone for a year and a half and how to, like, live this life, right? And they did this through countless hours of learning and doing everything outside of their normal life, outside of work, outside of everything. And it wasn't something that came easy, right? Decisions, big decisions like this comes with a cost. It comes with a cost of people and your peers not necessarily understanding why you want to do this. It comes from the cost of a career. You may be seeing like you're laying a little bit off track, right? But this commitment to making this big drastic change and towards all their time they spent learning all of these things on the side so they could make this big commitment to do this. This is kind of what is a big part of kind of how I learned to be kind of where I am. And so DO is one of these places where, you know, DO is where we tell process stories instead of success stories. We talk about journeys rather than destinations, where we share stories of revolutions but also of evolutions. So my story is one of multiple kind of slow evolutions over time. So this is like a big part of like how we are. And so I want to share a little bit about how I've invested all of my time towards doing and building myself into kind of who I am today, kind of how this kind of guides myself forward. So I'll start with being a photographer. I first learned to be a photographer working in dark rooms, working with film in school, but I gave it up for a couple years after undergrad. I didn't do anything around photography until I actually went back to graduate school where I was doing a business degree. My best friend, he convinced me to buy a digital camera and start taking pictures, and I carried it with me everywhere. This is actually the very first picture I took with my first digital camera, and something I end up committing a massive amount of my time and attention towards over time. And it's something I spent all of my time on, learning how to use a camera, learning how to edit photos, learning how to share them on the web. And I spent tons of time looking at the stuff that other people create as well. And eventually it became really a core focus to everything I did. It became a reason for me to travel, a reason for things to go to. And I structured projects and trips and travels kind of all around the world, kind of around exploring, taking pictures. And it's kind of the act of doing and taking pictures is how I learned. It's how I learned to share my story. It's how I learned to learn to look. It's how I learned to do things. And it became like a major part of my life throughout everywhere I went and everything I did. And so after a number of years of working in corporate jobs after grad school, I decided to, while I was doing all this photography on the side, I decided to leave and quit and take some time off really to devote myself to photography full time. And so I thought that's what I was going to do. So I found myself, after a couple of years of traveling all around the world to India and all around the States and all around the U.S. and Scotland and everywhere, I found myself in New York. And so a couple of years of traveling and living in New Orleans and other areas, I found myself in New York, and I found myself needing to make money. And so I first started to pitch myself as a photographer to places as a way to make money. And my big break as a photographer came when I actually lost a bid. So I lost a bid to shoot a conference, and I asked for a pass to attend. So I attended this conference, and I shot it as if I was the photographer who was shooting it. Showed up, took all the photos, edited everything, shared them with the organizers immediately after the day. And the organizers were so impressed by this that when their next event came around, they hired me. Right? And to this day, I still actually shoot events for them, and they refer me to other people. And this is how I came to shoot events where with presidents and CEOs and business luminaries and everybody. And this became a big part of my life. But this wasn't something I learned easily. This wasn't something that I was taught how to do. This was not something that came easily as well. Showing up at these events, being exposed to what I didn't know, being exposed to not knowing how to do certain things, working with dedicated professionals who have done this for years, decades even, and being really truly the amateur in the room is what made me the professional that I became. So the interesting thing about this is, for me, this wasn't just photography. I was fairly self-taught in kind of everything else I've done. One of the other big things I do is I work with early-stage entrepreneurs. Now, the way in which I work with early-stage entrepreneurs has changed over time. I first used how to use Excel and build financial models when I built a model for myself to track my spending. I started this 17 years ago, and actually today still track every single dollar I spend. So I built these financial models for myself, but eventually kind of learned how to build really deep, detailed financial models for clients. It actually, this process of analysis, process of using Excel as a tool to understand business, became something that was a guiding force behind my first jobs out of school and private equity and working in startups. But it also became a guiding force behind what I did as well. I ended up building financial models. After a number of years doing this for clients, I ended up building financial models for clients, for startups, building for friends. People knew I understood and I had to use the tools, and so they asked me to do this. And by continuing doing financial models for startups and friends over time, it eventually became a big thing that I did. Not something that I wasn't really taught. This is not something you're taught in school. It's not something you're really taught ahead of that. I just really kind of learned by doing and developed a competency in doing this. And the funny thing about this is it became like a really significant point and part of my life. But also, it became a big struggle for me. And so being asked to do all this stuff for friends and everything became a really, really hard thing to do. And I couldn't find a way to truly scale my impact I was having. And so I decided to turn what I did from a service into a product. And I built template financial models for startups to download. And so thousands of hours later, building models, thousands of hours later, teaching entrepreneurs how to build models, teaching people how to use this, it's now become a really, and tens of thousands of downloads later of these kind of templates I built, it's become a really, really significant kind of part of my life. But it kind of doesn't end there. I also learned, I learned a lot through writing. I've been writing on the web since 2002. I've been writing and sharing. Writing for me is kind of a forcing function. It's a forcing function to kind of really focus my thoughts and develop my ideas around something. There's nothing quite different. There's nothing quite like becoming interested in a subject and becoming an expert enough to actually teach about it. There's nothing quite like using and sharing your thoughts about an idea that you're really no more of an expert on than anyone else, but be willing to kind of share your voice around it. And it's that forcing function of writing, kind of sharing things, that's really been a huge part of kind of everything I've done. It's led to all my successes in life. It's led to the jobs I've gotten. It's led to the projects that have been successful. It's led towards me meeting my wife as well. It's also led me towards what I actually do today, which is working with early stage entrepreneurs. So for the last 3.5 years, until recently, I worked as a venture capitalist, right, investing into early stage startups on behalf of a corporate venture capital arm of a big ad agency in the U.S. We invested in early stage entrepreneurs at the earliest stages, working mainly focusing in the area of advertising and marketing technology. Now, this is an area I didn't really know that much about before I started, but my boss, and to my everlasting gratitude, realized that I could learn how to learn this area and understand and actually succeed at it. I love this. I got to sit down with hundreds, even thousands of entrepreneurs, discuss their ideas, figure out what they're doing, figure out how we could help, and for a very small number of them, actually directly invest in them, invest in their future. We approach this idea of how to be a venture capital investor a little bit differently than most, right? So we released books. We released a book called Create Entrepreneurship to the web. It's been downloaded by tens of thousands of entrepreneurs around the world. We built internal classes and taught about venture capital entrepreneurship inside the company itself. This idea of how to teach people to be innovative throughout the company is not something that just a small number of people who touch entrepreneurs should do, but something that everybody should be a part of. I approached doing it in a little bit different, transparent manner as well. I actually did a survey, did an anonymous survey of all of the entrepreneurs I met about how I did, how my performance was, and then shared this on the web. This is actually a graph of my net promoter score, basically, of a couple of years of entrepreneurs and whether they would recommend me to people. Obviously, I failed a couple of times there, but we did this. We did this in a very different way. Now, I said until recently because this past summer I left, right? So I left my job to pursue other things. I left because I wanted to further my growth and grow in very different ways. So I've kind of gone back to a bit more of the consulting and the advising and the mentoring of startups that I've always done in the past. And I've done this through my own work, but also in directly working with a nonprofit called Venture for America. Now, Venture for America is this nonprofit that was founded by a very successful entrepreneur a couple years ago. He founded this basically as a way for smart, young, passionate people coming out of college to spend their time making and learning by doing and working with startups rather than working in big companies and big organizations. And he did this basically because in the States, it's hard sometimes to find a job at startups, right? So especially coming out of school. When you come out of school in the States, you end up oftentimes working for big companies because big companies are the ones that come. They're the ones that come to recruit for you. They're the ones that come to universities to recruit. And for kids coming out of school, it can be really hard. It can be really hard for them to understand technology. It can be really hard for them to understand what's a good startup and what's a bad one. And so Venture for America kind of fills that gap. Right? This isn't a problem necessarily for people who come from San Francisco or Boston or New York or other big areas, but it is for a lot of the other smaller cities all throughout the U.S. And so Venture for America fills this gap. And so for me, Venture for America, it's a story I connect with. It's a story that I think of all the years that I spent out of school, spent and misspent in many ways in big corporations. And I often think about how my life would be different if I'd worked directly with startups right from the very beginning. My journey to working with companies was not easy. Not easy at all. So I'm sure many of you are familiar with this idea of something called a desire path. Right? So this desire path. Desire paths are something that's created by people. They're created by users. They're not created by planners. Right? They're created by what happens when we release people upon the world. I often think of my own path as something that's happened from doing, and it hasn't happened from planning. And it hasn't happened the same way. And it's been tough, right? someone in the beginning had to kind of start this way and go this other way, and people had to then follow them along the way. For me, it's been tough to kind of take my own path away from an old plan. It's tough to do multiple things. It's tough to have multiple versions of yourself, often simultaneously. It's tough to develop skills by doing, and not with degrees or with titles or with simple and easy ways to understand. And it's tough to spend the time doing these things. My wife and I, we have a thing where we go to art museums, right? We look at the paintings and pictures and the arts in the museums, but we also look at the artist bios. And the funny thing about these artist bios, if you ever kind of read them, you'll see they tell the story about the artist, about how they came to do this. They'll tell the story of X year they moved here, this year they started doing this, and then this year they actually kind of, this is when they created the art. The funny thing about this is these gaps in between those years are 5, 10, 20 years, but they can get condensed into this one single thing that we see on the wall. And it's those years and years and years of hard process which are generally not recognized. Like, we don't see the long time it takes behind the scene for many artists to do this. They take years to learn their processes, years of not being fully and completely understood by people, movements that created that made no sense when they first started, but now we fully understand them in retrospect. And I think that's part of what happens over time, right? So it's really hard to understand the processes that we go through at the time we're actually going through them. Sometimes even hard, even in retrospect. Hugh McLeod, a writer in the States, he has a thing that's always resonated with me. He has a thing he wrote, said, never compare your inside with somebody else's outside. And what he means by that is, you know, when you see someone else's outside, you see only a smidgen, only a small part of their lives. And when we look at ourselves, we see our insides and our outsides. And our thoughts become jumbled up about all these different things going on in our lives. The fact is, everybody has that rumbling going on. Like, even these people we see they're very simple, the stories they tell, but we don't necessarily see all the hard parts and the tributes and the tribulations that came towards getting to where they are. One of the reasons I love Do is because Do is where this gets turned inside out, where people share the stories of these processes. And so I want to leave you with a couple of things. I want to leave you with things to kind of remember that I've kind of learned through my life. Spend your time learning by doing. Celebrate those that help by doing as well as building. Celebrate projects as much as jobs. Do what you would do regardless of whether you get paid, because if you do it for long enough, you might actually get paid for it eventually. Celebrate the hours you spend learning on your own. Celebrate the endings of projects as much as you celebrate the beginnings of them. Don't worry about the degrees or the titles or the things. Don't worry about feeling an amateur. Use the friction that comes along with building as fuel to the fire. And know that rumbling inside yourself is something that everybody else feels as well, that few listen to and that even fewer act upon. Thank you.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or, if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out. For our weekly curation of wonder and optimism, sign up to our newsletter by visiting thedolectures.com/newsletter.